And we are sitting here in the studio with Jens Hennig. He is the Vice President of Operations for GAMA, the General Aviation Manufacturers Association in Washington, D.C. Welcome, Jens.
Thank you. I appreciate you guys having me on the show.
We appreciate you being here. So you are responsible, I understand, for the safety, security, and operations at GAMA. Tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, so most people probably know about GAMA's work for the aircraft manufacturers directly, and we have a big staff in that. I probably get to have the most fun because I get to, let's call it, dabble across the industry, you know, security with TSA, some international issues, safety and accident investigation. So I probably have one of the more interesting activities going on within the association. I have fun at work.
I see that you've been very active, or your staff's been very active with the ATC modernization program, and that's been a pretty big deal over the past few years. So how has GAMA been involved in that?
Yeah, so I think one of the rules and the requirements are really getting everybody's attention right now is ADS-B. It's gone from this big nebulous scary thing called Next Gen back in the 2000s, and now that we're looking at a rule about 6-7 years out, we're certainly trying to get the message out there that this is real. The FAA worked with the industry. They got all the operators to the table around 2006-2007 when the program was laid out, and they're really executing on a strategy that AOPA, EAA, the airlines all were part of the layout, and unlike many other FAA efforts, this is a program that's on schedule, it's real, it's meet its requirements.
Yeah, and a lot of this stuff, this new technology, you know, the military and the airlines, they get in on it very quickly, and you don't really think about the trickle down to general aviation, and of course, how that's going to affect the manufacturing of aircraft and how they're going to fit in. So,
yeah, one of the main things that, you know, lessons learned from past modernization efforts, you know, we looked at 76, it was transponder was introduced, we had the debacle around Mode S in the late 80s, and when the FAA launched this program, they really wanted to avoid those things. One of the main things was to have a clear plan, clear requirements, and really enough time to do this right. So that's why you saw a rule in 2010, and the mandate is not until 2020.
Really? December 31st, 2019.
You got it.
That's only 5 years and change away.
You got it. And that's really one of the things that the industry, I think, needs to start paying attention to. Right when the rule came out, there was a lot of debate within the trade press, and we all got somewhat smart on what was going on. But now, you're at the point where if you own an aircraft or if you're a flight school operators, you should start thinking about what your plan is. I'm not telling you should buy tomorrow necessarily, but it's probably time to start having a conversation with your avionics vendor, other people that are equipping. Does this make sense for me now? What are the benefits I can get today, such as the FAA's provided weather service, the TSB services that are out there today nationwide as of March this year? Does it make sense to do it now, or should you plan on a later day? We certainly as manufacturers are starting to get concerned about the equipage rate. We have 5,000 equipped aircraft, most of them GA today with rule-compliant equipment, but it's just 5 years. So if you start calling up your avionics vendor in 2019, there might be a queue waiting to have their equipment upgraded.
How many aircraft total GA do we have in the system in the U.S. today? Do you have a number for that?
Yeah, I think the fleet sits at about 220,000, and the question has been, who needs to upgrade? Nobody really knows. The fair assumption is, let's look at transponder airspace. The rule is built mostly around the same airspace. So FAA data says that the transponder-equipped GA fleet is about 160,000 aircraft, plus minus 10,000. So we know we're at 5,000. Most of us have been equipped in the past 18 months, so there is truly early adopters out there doing this. But at this rate, we're not going to get to 2020. We need to up the rate of adoption by in about 5 to 10, do about, you know, 50 to 100 airplanes literally per day to get to the path of a 2020 mandate.
Wow, that makes your eyes pop when you think about it that way. I mean, are the avionics shops salivating over this, or are they in a panic?
I think it goes across the range. The Aircraft Electronics Association, they've really done a good job educating the shops about the fact that the rules are there, this is real, and you can start equipping the aircraft. The manufacturers are taking the steps to provide equipment. If you go around the field here, you'll see equipment from Avidyne, Bendix King, Free Flight, Garmin, Honeywell, Collins, ACS. Yes, they're all having the equipment on the field. So, again, it's time for the conversation. It's time to get smart on it. And repair station shops may start getting busier pretty soon. Our peak equipage rate that we've seen in the GA field was when people started equipping with WAS. Very popular. We got about 80,000 units out there in the system. Peak rate of adoption was 10,000 a year. We are basically going to have to double that rate to get to the ADS-B mandate. So again, if you're up here at Oshkosh, go around and talk to the vendors, talk to your repair station, and see what you can do.
And I know for a fact that it works everywhere now. Right? I mean, I took a trip 2 years ago.
I'm not sure if that look is, which we can't see on the radio, but.
If you're on the webcam, yeah. You might have seen it. I took a trip 2 years ago, and I've got an ADS-B in-out equipped airplane, and I lost it somewhere in Wyoming, and I picked it up as soon as I came over the range towards Spokane, Washington, and I never lost it again on a full circle route around the U.S. Did the trip again a year later and lost ADS-B coverage above 5,000 feet.
Yeah. The deployment, again, it started up in Alaska in the 90s, and that was really the test case. Then it started percolating out of Florida. There was some work done by Embry-Riddle and others to test the equipment, and they've done some of the early research. And then the FAA contracted for the service, and there are now about 600 ground stations across the NAS. The idea was to match radar airspace, so if you get down into the lower altitudes, you may not have the service. But as of March of this year, about a month before the FAA schedule, they had it the nationwide planned service. There's been some discussions about expanding it further, but if you're flying, especially east of the Mississippi and elsewhere, you should be able to get access to service. You get into the mountain regions, you know, if you're not getting the service, you know, it's a line of sight kind of system, so you need to be aware of that limitation. But free weather, free traffic, and air terror services are coming online.
Now, traffic's a sticky point, because if you only have ADS-B in, you're not getting good traffic. You're getting traffic that's being reflected from somebody else who's got out.
Well, it depends on what system you went for. There are some listen-only devices, and if you go down that path again, get smart on what its limitations are, and especially with a dual-channel discussion, I don't want to do a geek-out experience here between UAT and 1090.
We got plenty of geeks listening. It's okay.
but you're right.
There is that issue. Again, get smart on it, but some of our members, they've looked at that and said, you know, if you're going for an installed device, and especially if you're new equipage, being able to listen to two channels is not an issue. So some of the vendors are out there, they're providing listening mode for the receiver for both 1090 and UAT, so you get for both air carriers and larger aircraft and the international aircraft as well as the UAT feature. So that is there. If you also take this step to become rule compliant, that's the out feature, you will not only have rule compliance, but you'll also identify yourself much better to the other aircraft out there in the system that I've also equipped.
And my understanding is if you're doing out, you're getting much better traffic. The traffic that you will see painted on your screen is accurate to its location in relation to you.
Yeah, we have an implementation group that we're running jointly with the FAA. It's AOPA, GAMA, a few other associations. We get together quarterly. And when the signal was turned on, the testimonials that we got both from controllers who were used to controlling traffic around a tower in a certain airspace, and suddenly they started seeing aircraft earlier and could pick them up for whatever kind of services they were looking for. Same thing with pilots launching. Getting a direct to much earlier is a feature that you, in many cases, get out of the out feature. Again, the contract has the services deployed to match radar, but the contractor laid it out in a way that in many cases you get services all the way down to the surface because they've put the stations at a key GA airport.
Yeah, in Florida and all along the Gulf Coast and all the way across the Gulf of Mexico, we have service to the surface because you put so many stations out there for the oil rigs, for the helicopters.
Yeah, I mean, the Gulf of Mexico story is, again, one of those positive news stories for the benefits for general aviation. If you know the old way that the platforms were being supported under limited weather conditions, it was literally a grid pattern that they followed. They dropped out the stations on the platforms. That included weather, and that supports a good bit of the Mexican Gulf Coast and, of course, down toward Florida as well. With you don't have any line of sight issues necessarily out there.
No line of sight issues at all. In fact, when I'm taxiing at my little air park, I can see traffic on the ground. So it's wonderful.
So it's literally surface.
literally surface. And I'm 9.5 miles from the station that they put in at the regional airport.
Yeah, and it's you know, I want to get credit to AOPA and some of the early stakeholders that jumped in on those conversations. You know, the FAA was just looking to roll out a ground infrastructure, but they have a very very solid contractor supporting that, and they came to the meetings, and you know, the user community said, "What? How can I get real benefits?" And instead of putting it at a cell tower in the middle of nowhere, if we put it on the ground, I think Lakeland is one of the airports that has one right there. Suddenly, when you're sitting at the end of the runway, you have your FISB services, you have surveillance all the way down to the ground, and several things that didn't exist before. So, you know, there's real pockets of good benefit, and I think what we're missing out on is getting that good, solid message out there that, hey, it's there, you can use it, and oh, by the way, my experience as a GA pilot is I can get weather, I can get service, all these different things.
What about these? I mean, you know, Florida is a pretty saturated area. What about some of the more remote areas where you've got people flying, they've got one VOR still, and it's a lot of uncontrolled airspace? There's benefit for them as well.
Yeah, one of the ancillary programs that the FAA built into the ADS-B program is something called MLAT. It's multilateration. That's a similar type service that they deploy out in the mountain regions. Again, you have some limitations with both radar and other surveillance, but by putting, if you look at a map on the FAA's website of the stations, they've saturated a certain part around the key ski airports out in the Colorado area. Mm. And by doing that, where there wasn't surveillance before, you actually have surveillance into the passes.
So, do you have a presence on the field here where people can come and talk to you about this a little bit more?
Yeah, Gamma has a booth. We're kind of hidden away over by the A hangar. Probably easier to reference is the Jepson tent. We're one booth over, so come and stop by. Not only can you see us, but we also have the folks from Build-A-Plane hosting two aircraft there. We had some high school kids.
Build-A-Compliant Plane.
Good, fun project, and just the excitement and the enthusiasm from those kids has been great.
That's neat. And if people didn't get a chance, you know, to make it to Oshkosh this year or to AirVenture, where can they find you on the web and in between?
We are at www.gamma.aero.
That's G-A-M-A dot A-E-R-O.
Well, thank you very much. This has been Jens Hennig with GAMA, the General Aviation Manufacturers Association. We really appreciate you coming in and talking to us about this today.
Thank you so much.
And you've been listening to Attitude Adjustment on EAA Radio 96.5 FM, 1210 AM.